Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips and PC. It is Saturday, the 8th day of August, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Let's start with...
New mouth?
Yeah, just I brushed my teeth, can't do a thing with it. If you've ever used any of Google's voice services for assistant, maps, and search, you will have gotten a lengthy notice about some major changes as to how and why it collects audio of what you say. These actions are a response to last year's revelations about how humans were contracted to review those clips and how some of them got leaked. The top line takeaway here is that every user has been opted out of data collection. That is, opted out. So now you would have to opt in if you wanted to be part of data collection. So that's actually a very good thing. Specifically, Apple has opted every account owner out of the permission to let the company log voice and audio activity. Users will be able to find the toggle under web and app activity controls in their activity controls. And I have a URL that Steve can put up once he's set up. Voice data that have already been saved will remain saved unless the user manually deletes them. You can delete samples by using the filter by date and product box under the search bar in the Google My Activity page, which is that same page he'll put a link up to in a little bit, and selecting voice and audio at the bottom of the list. Otherwise, data can be deleted automatically based on the auto-delete setting for your web and app activity, 3 months, 18 months, or never. The company is also clarifying how it uses the audio it collects, saying it uses the raw data unlinked to the user's account to train new artificial intelligence voice recognition models and assigns human reviewers to transcribe and annotate the clips to aid model training. The data are also used to help users' devices better recognize their voice so it can pick up OK Google Voice Match requests. Oh, sorry for all of you out there who just went off. These data are tied to the account. The company does not collect clips of voice recordings made to other Google services or of locally recorded audio. We didn't know that Google had been using humans to process in its process until the practice was reported on by Belgium's VRT News last July, when it was available to obtain thousands of samples that contained everything from Monday requests for restaurants to very personal location data, and in some cases private conversations and activities triggered by the user's device falsely detecting the hot phrase "Hey" or "Okay," followed by the word "Google." The company took humans off of reviews in light of the report and promised to keep them off until it was able to reconfirm users and voice activity settings. That's basically what's happening with this notification right now. The Verge is reporting that Google will not assign humans to review voice clips that have already been saved up to when the new policy took effect. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google opts all users out of voice data collection. And your choices are about time, that's nice, I don't care, wait, Google collects data, and of course, others. So far we've got 23 votes, and wait, Google collects data, you wiseacres, is number one, followed by about time. We've got 23 votes from 13 locations. If you have selected other, or if you have more to say, which I know so many of you will, you can go to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. First link there is the forums. The second forum down is poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 8Aug20. Google opts all users out of voice data collection. And you can also, of course, even if you do put something in the poll discussion forum, you can also give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or call us on our brand new and very sexy text line, 585-205-8887. And of course, all of those numbers are listed right at the top right of our website.
So now that they have all the data they need, they're going to stop collecting it?
Yeah. Well, they got their wrists slapped is what actually happened.
Mm.
So they had, to do the, nice thing and undo everybody's stuff. Although they said they did. Well, they said they did. And, yeah. The big thing, people were not, in general, at least, people were not upset that Google was recording their data and using it, to improve their services. They were upset that they were using humans to do some of that. Nobody cares what a computer hears because A, it doesn't care, and B, they're not saving it to send back to you. They're just using it as analysis.
Mm-hmm.
But humans will, of course, remember all that stuff and et cetera, et cetera. So that was the real issue right there. But yeah, so they've got, so they've gotten their wrists slapped and they're now, doing some, I guess,
stuff.
Damage control, I guess is the, yeah, I was trying to be politer than that, but it's damage control.
Yeah.
They're doing some damage control and that's where they stand right now. So that's okay. And, we'll see where that goes in the future. Google's changing a lot of things. We'll see more, more Google news as we
go along.
Should
be interesting.
We'll see. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Sean calling all the way from Albuquerque, New Mexico. He took that left, as Steve said. Hi, Sean. What's up?
Hi, I have a question about getting a new computer. My 9-year-old Dell just died. The hard drive died.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm looking for a new computer that can do some video streaming and GoPro editing as the maximum that I would do.
Well,
that's pretty high-end work.
Yeah, GoPro editing is pretty high-end stuff. So are you looking for a Windows machine, a Mac, a Linux box? What are you looking for?
Windows.
Okay, then I will say that Dell makes excellent machines.
Yeah, I'd go with one of their gaming machines.
Right, one of their higher-end gaming machines, whether you get a desktop, which is generally you get more bang for your buck with a desktop.
I would go with a better video card.
Right.
Not, you know, on board, a separate video card and at least 32 gig of memory. 32 to start.
And typically that's what you see in the gaming machines is they do have higher end components because that's what you need for gaming. But coincidentally, that also makes video editing work a lot better too with the extra RAM and the extra processor.
Yeah. The key there is you got to get the separate video card and, you know, get a one with a few gig of memory on that also.
Okay. And then what do you think about building a computer versus buying a pre-made one from Dell?
If you're comfortable with it, building your own it gives you, again, more bang for the buck. It's either going to be cheaper or you get better and more components for the same money.
But if you have them build it, that way you've got a warranty to fall back on.
Exactly.
If something you try building, I'm going to try this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't match correctly. You know, you're responsible. You don't do it right. You're responsible for it.
Yeah, a single warranty point instead of needing to go to each component for the warranty.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
So yeah, if you know what I would do is price it out and see what the difference is between buying a specific Dell thing or going to Newegg or one of those and buying components.
Like I said,
and see what that difference is and see if it's worth it to you for the warranty.
One of the things you'll notice from every vendor is they'll have a cheap line and they'll have a good line.
Right.
And then they'll have a professional line
yeah.
with higher prices as you go up the line.
But so, also higher quality of components.
Yeah. Yeah, for a home user surfing the web, you don't need super whiz bang.
Well, that's one of the nice things about the Dell. You can go ahead and put together the system that you want. Because sometimes, like any other manufacturer, they're going to throw in some other stuff that maybe you don't even need.
Right.
You know, two DVD drives. No, one's fine. You know, a 2 terabyte drive, you know, twin terabyte hard drives or whatever. You know, you can mix and match and make it your machine.
And, okay. And if you go for an SSD, that's a lot faster to read and write files, but then usually ends up costing a bit more because SSDs cost more than spinning drives.
What many people do is they buy a medium size, say, half a terabyte or 1 terabyte SSD for their C drive in your case.
Yeah.
And then they have a 2 or 3 terabyte spinning drive as the D drive.
For saving
for
all
storage.
Yeah. You put your operating system on C, everything else goes to D.
Right.
Okay.
And that thing will fly.
So your programs and your operating system are on the C drive, and that loads fast. But data, it's going to be slow anyway because now you're talking about GoPro, you know, multi-gig files. So, So if you're going to be doing editing, video editing, you need a lot of disk space, and having that in SSD is very, very expensive.
All right. Now, on some of these Dell machines, is it possible that I can buy a model and then upgrade the storage?
If it's a desktop, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, they give you different options as you're building the machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can swap it out, and same with the video cards.
Or if you want to add a drive on your own later, if it's a desktop, it's a standard product. You pull off a side, you've got connectors, you add in, you do what you want.
Yeah, putting in, even if right now you, like you said, you get a solid state, and you want to add a D later down the road or, you know, after, and you can get a better deal. Or maybe the machine you got right now has a good, hard drive in it that you can wipe out. And, you know, instead of just throwing it all out, salvage that for storage and just pop it into the machine. They'll have slots in it. The desktop will have a slot that you can slide it in.
Depending on which model you buy, which case you buy, essentially.
Yeah, you got to get a full tower. You don't want a desktop.
Right.
You want a tower.
A mini tower.
That'll have the slot that you could put the hard drive in it, hook up the cable for it, and away you go.
And Dell, actually, I'm on their website now. They have a neat little thing where you can pick what level processor you want, whether you want the i3, the i5, the i7, the i9, you know 8th, 9th, 10th gen. So you can work your way up. And I very quickly got to a $4,000 computer.
Right.
by putting the best of everything in.
Well, but the point is you can mix and match.
Yeah.
And you can go back and change it. If you come at it and you look at that bottom price, it's $4,000. You think, well, all right, maybe I don't need the i9. Maybe I can get away with the i7.
They don't need Windows Pro. You can do with just standard Windows.
Right. You can make all kinds of changes yourself. So I think that's, right now I'm thinking that's your best bet.
Or they'll try to throw in extended warranties. If you just want the standard warranty, go with that. And, you know.
Although an extended warranty is never a bad thing.
Yeah. It's what you want to pick and choose and do yourself.
Okay. Is there a really solid, reliable video card that you can recommend off the bat, or just look and see?
Both NVIDIA and AMD make excellent cards.
Yeah, NVIDIA.
Right. Yeah. The important thing is, in your case, you're probably going to want a decent amount of RAM on it and a fairly higher end, at least a medium end card.
Yeah.
Okay.
And typically, the more video RAM there is, the better the card is overall anyway.
You're going to pay a couple, around $250 for a decent video card.
If you look at least 6 gigs of video RAM, you know, if not 8 or more, then you know you're getting a better video card.
Right.
Okay.
6 gigs of video RAM.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's for a major gamer.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want any lag.
Or for the kind of editing he's looking to do.
Yep, exactly. It all fits into that category that it moves fast and you don't get the pause or
the
lag
lagging
or
and stuttering.
You're paying for what you get in this case.
Yep.
Sure.
Okay. But like Nick said, I would highly recommend. What size hard drive's in your current machine?
Yeah, that, it died. That's why he's getting a new one.
Oh, okay.
It was a 1 terabyte.
Well, you can pick up 1 terabyte normal hard drives, you know, anywheres, and you can get a good price on them, and they're not hard to install.
And take a look at that, because if you get the right desktop, you may have 2 or 3 or 4 empty slots.
Yeah.
And would a 2 terabyte drive be cheaper than 2 1 terabyte drives, or mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing? And whatever you get, you can always add more later, so you can have working storage and then working space and then storage
yes.
on 2 separate drives, right?
But where he can save some money is he doesn't have to get a real super big solid state drive. He can get a small one because
right.
that's going to have the operating system on it.
Right.
And then everything else, programs and all that, you put it over on the D drive.
And the only thing you have to do at that point is whatever software you're using, you go into the preferences and tell it where your temp file should go mm-hmm. and where your storage should go and that stuff. And that should all be on your D or E drives.
And that'll be a fast machine.
Right.
Okay, that's great.
Okie doke.
Anything else?
All right. No, I think that's good. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, Sean, thanks. And don't forget, spread the word of Soundbites in Albuquerque.
I will.
Thanks.
And, let us know how you make out, please.
Okay, thank
yep.
you.
Thanks.
And especially if you're editing, you know, you're doing 4K or 8K video, you could be talking about gigabits per second throughput
right.
on your card. And so having that extra processor Anywhere speed, the extra video card speed really helps.
Yeah.
Now, I'm using my 12 megapixel iPhone camera.
Yeah.
And it really is noticeably better quality than the 720p camera in the computer.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
Computers generally don't have a very good camera in them. And we're noticing that a lot lately with so many teleconferencing, video conferencing meetings. And that's why there's been a run on webcams. In yeah. fact, you virtually cannot buy a webcam online anywhere.
Yeah, it's hard right now.
So I found some software to let you turn your phone into a webcam because your nice. Phone has a really, really good camera in it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ray from somewhere in Louisiana.
I got a very strange question about my Mac.
Yeah.
To ask. Got the latest version. Everything's updated on it, running Catalina. We picked up a relatively new laser printer. It's a Xerox laser printer. And, of course, I had to go to their website to download drivers and everything. And the issue I'm having is it works great and fine, but every so often it seems like I have to reload the drivers. And I'm trying to determine why it's not hanging on to the drivers.
What makes you think you need to reload the driver?
Well, because when we go do a print, all of a sudden I get a whole bunch of blank pages coming out with maybe little hieroglyphic, little crazy symbols on it. And supposedly that means it's not recognizing the print drivers.
Not necessarily. That sounds like it's printing the printer control code instead of executing the printer control code.
Okay.
You may not need to reinstall the driver completely. You may just need to delete the print queue from your system preference and add it back again. But it may be something physically wrong in the printer, something in the controller in the printer, to not be executing the commands to do the print instead of, and instead printing the commands.
We can do a little bit of troubleshooting. The next time this happens, you just cycle the printer, power it off, wait about 10 seconds, power it back on again, and try reprinting and see if that solves the issue. That would tell you that the problem is somewhere in the printer itself.
Yeah.
Possibly RAM overheating, if it only happens after a while, after the printer's been on for a while, that sort of thing. If it's not that, you can just try rebooting your machine and see if that solves the problem. That will tell you that it's a connection issue,
yeah,
connecting to the printer correctly.
What programs are you typically printing from?
Well, you know, I mean, my wife can be printing something from an email, something off a website, you could be printing a document that she has on the machine. The weird part is I've had it where it happens on the computer, but I could take my phone, do an AirPlay to print something off my phone. It works fine.
Yeah, so that's using the AirPrint protocol instead of the PCL protocol from the computer.
And this is all set up wirelessly. It's not hardwired into the USB cord or anything.
Yeah. You may want to try, when it happens, try printing just a simple line of text in TextEdit, which just a straight text file is sort of the lowest common denominator. It may be something in the page definition language that it's misinterpreting, and then that's why it's printing the code instead of executing the code.
We've also seen, particularly when you have two or three different machines all printing to the same printer, every once in a while some programs don't properly end the print stream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next thing that comes in gets misinterpreted.
Mm-hmm. They don't get the end of carriage return.
Right. Or some other thing.
Yeah, like that.
So it may well be that when you're printing from multiple machines, one of those machines is having an issue. We had that problem with a version, I think it was 2010, of Microsoft Office with certain printers. It would not properly end the print stream.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next person who printed, if you didn't cycle the printer, the next person who printed got gobbledygook.
Yeah. What what model printer is it offhand, do you know?
It's a B205.
Sometimes what we've seen is if you're trying to print in PCL5 versus PCL6 versus PostScript, that can be a difference.
Right.
And whether the computer is picking the right printer driver when it loads it, you often have choices of which driver it can print from. You might want to try one of the other ones. So if it's picking PCL6, you could change it to the PCL5.
How do I determine that?
in the print setup. When you add the printer, you pick which driver you want it to use.
PCL5, PCL6, whatever.
PostScript.
The other thing is make sure all the machines that print to it are using exactly the same driver. So as Steve just said, if one is using PCL5 and the other is using PCL6, that can cause an issue.
Because all it gives me is the print driver package, and I just execute it. I don't think it gives me any alternative at this point.
No, not when you install the driver, when you pick the printer in your system preferences.
Oh, okay.
That's when you choose what driver to use.
Right. So make sure they're all using the same driver.
Okay.
And I'm trying to see what page language this uses. It says PSPCL. So it may not be Adobe PostScript. It may be generic PostScript.
Right.
Sometimes that's a problem when you're printing graphic pages, which almost everything is from the Mac, is a graphics page.
But okay. Yeah, try a few of those things and let us know.
Okay, so basically you just say somewhere I have to pick the right language then for this?
Right. When you go into the system preferences to add the printer, you can pick what printer driver, I think it says print using, you pick which driver it's using and pick one of the other options. And
just
see
make
if that
sure
works
all
any
the
better.
Printers are using the same driver. Yeah. That's the important thing.
Okay. All right, I'll give that a try.
Okie doke, thanks.
Could I ask one quick other question?
You'll have to hold on. We have to take a break right now, but stay on the line and we'll get back to you in a minute. Okay? All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And those of you on the YouTube channel can see that Steve is having fun playing around with stuff. And we have Ray from somewhere in Louisiana on the line. Ray, what's your next question?
Just a quick one. We got an email from Google about something called a class action settlement. And is that something legit that you respond to?
Well, yes. What's happened is that there were, I forget what the exact issue, but it was something with Google Plus. Oh, they released people's personal data. So if you are, if you were a Google Plus user and you had privacy settings on, you can get a part of a settlement. They're
$12.
Yeah, they're estimating that each person would get $12. So if you want to go through the hassle for $12, go for it. It is legit.
But how do you prove you were, well, you got to prove you were a member of Google Plus and your data was leaked?
Well, they know that. That everybody's data was leaked. But the question is, if you were a member of Google Plus and all your data were marked as private. Mm. So
between
those
January 1st, 2015 and April 2nd, 2019.
Right.
So when did I join Google Plus? I don't know.
Right. Me neither.
Well, but they do. They have those records.
So maybe that's why I'm getting the email. Because
you are a part of that that group. So if you could
get a whole $12.
Actually,
what the hell? It's $12.
It's $12 cash.
A lot of these settlements, you get like a $5 gift card to the company store.
Right. This is actually $12 cash or a check, I suppose. But you know, if all it is filling out a form, go for it. It is legit. And so, assuming check the URL, it should be a Google.
There
URL.
Is a claim form. Google+datalitigation.com.
There you
is
go.
Is the form you the website, which is what's in that
email.
Email, yeah.
So make sure that's where you're going.
And you have to claim it by October 8th.
Okay, very good. Just was wondering if it was a scam or not.
No, it's a legit. It's a
crazily legit. Enough, this one is legitimate.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right, Ray. Have fun. And of course, now your job is to spread the Soundbites gospel throughout Louisiana.
I will do that.
All right. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye. So we've had Albuquerque and we've had Louisiana. We've had New Mexico and Louisiana so far. And it's possible that that was somewhere near New Orleans, I suppose. And I don't know where was he in New Mexico? Los Lunas, New Mexico. But he said something else. Anyway, let's get a little closer to home right now, and we'll talk to Gary from Rochester, New York. What's up, Gary?
Hi, I'm a homeboy, so let me tell you, I've got some good news and bad news and then a question.
Yeah.
And the good news is green light's coming into my building, and the bad news is I'm still on Frontier, and the worst news is I think I got caught in a phishing scam, and
uh-oh.
I wanted to put it out there and see if any of your other listeners, if their opinion is that it's a scam. But I fell for it, and I'll tell you what it is, that I got emails allegedly from Frontier saying that they were going to change their format, and they needed my email address, and they needed my password.
Ouch!
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
Yeah, uh-oh is right.
Ouch!
They already have both of those. They don't need it.
Yeah. Well, so I remembered about 2 hours after I filled it out. So the first thing I did is got in as fast as I could and changed my password, which
excellent.
Might give me a little protection.
Yeah.
But I just wondered if others fell for it and what the results were. But as I say, until green light's really here, I'll stick with it.
Yeah.
The question is about DuckDuckGo. I'm sure you know it's highly advertised as not collecting so much data as certainly Google does and Microsoft and others. And whether you think it's worthwhile switching over to it as the main search engine.
A lot of people use DuckDuckGo. It is much more private than any other product, but it's also not quite as good in results.
Didn't they just get in trouble recently?
Yeah,
they don't share data with other people, but they still collect it themselves.
Right.
Yeah, I see. And then they sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
To advertisers.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
one way or the other.
Yeah, it's the lesser of several evils.
Yeah. But you were smart though in going right back in there and quick changing the password.
Yeah.
Because now if they try to get back in there, because they're probably getting email probably went out to thousands.
I know it.
So for them to get to your account, they probably didn't do it within that hour because they were still collecting data. So that was smart that you quick got in there and changed that email, because now if they try to go back in there with that email address that you gave them, it's going to bounce them out.
Yeah, I'll hope for the best. I mean,
I think you're going to be okay.
Yeah, you never know, but
yeah.
The other thing to do is to get a different email program.
Yeah,
of course.
And once you stop using Frontier, that email program should go away.
Yeah,
your email address rather should go away. So now is the time to start using a Gmail, whatever you want.
I would say Gmail, because then that way he doesn't have to worry about what system he's using.
Okay.
It goes wherever you are. So even if, say, you're on a phone or a tablet, you don't have to worry about saving a lot of information that, because it's there.
Right. The other thing is, if you get it now, you'll be able to start telling people, stop using my Frontier address. Please start using my Gmail address.
Yeah.
Okay. Start it now, as a matter of fact. I would
today.
Sign up for a Gmail account.
It's free.
And you know, it offers a great things. It'll automatically upload your photos. You can use Google Docs. Everything. You can store it up there for free.
Good.
It's one form of backup.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, try it out.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, our pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, we recommend that whatever internet service provider you use, get an independent email address. We like Gmail, but of course, Yahoo and several others are available. Apple, you can get one. You can get an Outlook address, et cetera, et cetera. But I would suggest that you do that. And essentially divorce yourself from the internet service provider's email package. That way, if you ever change internet service providers, you don't have to worry about it.
That's why I wish my wife would get rid of Yahoo.
Yeah.
Oh, I keep telling, she's got a Google account. I said, just start using
but
that.
But I've been using it forever.
Yeah,
it's harder to change your identity.
Thing.
Yeah. It's harder to change your email address than it is to change your postal address.
Yeah, right.
No lie.
But you can do it. And in particular with something like Yahoo, which also won't go away, you can forward everything to Gmail.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, you can just set up a forward. And in fact, Gary can do that right now on Frontier. Once he gets his Gmail address or whatever he gets, he can then forward the Frontier stuff to it until that goes away.
Yep.
And he'll be all right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. What's up, Pat?
Well, I have an interesting situation.
Uh-oh.
I'm using the GPS or Google Map. My street number, 18, appears in a park at the end of the street. Now, two more pieces of information. 16 and 20 are right on my street. So they are correct. But for some reason, the Google people have decided I reside in a park.
Yeah, it's
how do I fix that? I mean,
it's a global positioning point that they put in for your house.
Mm-hmm.
That's off. I run into that right now with the new Google, the software that we use for our company. Matter of fact, just this week they had me going over on this one street, and it was wrong because it was one street over on Phelps Road into this apartment complex. But they had me going off on this other street as I could get into there, and you can't.
You can fix it fairly easily. Well, you can start the process fairly easily.
And I posted the link.
Okay, good. In Google Maps, make sure you're signed in, and then in the menu, send feedback. And then follow the instructions to send feedback. I've done that more than once for both directions. I have a friend who lives at the butt end of one of the Finger Lakes. And the way they sent me around, there was a mudslide or a road slide or some kind of slide. And a piece of mountain came down over that end of the road.
Now, if it happened yesterday, you can't blame them.
Right.
But when it happened 6 months ago and they haven't updated yet.
Well, and then what I said to, there was a guy plowing his field. That's the kind of area that is. And I asked him, I said, you know, how long has this been out? He said, oh, a couple of years.
Yep.
So I sent that feedback.
And they corrected.
Because in that place, it was another half an hour to go to the other end of the road and come down.
Yeah.
And I sent that as feedback to Google. And just for the fun of it, I checked about 3 weeks later, and they had indeed corrected the routing, and it sent me the right way. So they do listen.
Yep.
They do pay attention.
Oh, I know they do because, like I say, right now, with us picking up all our clients, you know, some of the streets are, it's not uncommon to some of these apartment complexes and everything else that are popping up, they have you over somewhere else. So they are very responsive, though. So fill it out.
Okay. Now, how do you sign into Google Maps?
When you're on the Google Maps page, you're already in.
Right. So if you're at maps.google.com, if you're on your desktop.
Maps.google.com.
Maps.google.com. Make sure you're signed in with your Google account.
Right.
You might be able to give feedback without being signed in. Let me try.
Well, you probably can.
I'm
signed
in. Yeah. I'm signed in. That's not a problem.
Yeah. And then in the top left, click menu.
The three horizontal lines.
The three horizontal lines.
Right. Menu.
And then you should find send feedback there.
Near the bottom.
Tips and tricks that help.
Yeah, it should be four below get help.
Four below get help. Oh, that's right. I have to scroll down further. And send, wonderful. I'm right on there, and I will, as soon as I hang up, I will send my feedback. Gentlemen, thanks very much. Makes me happy to be a member of Jazz 90.1 and get all this wonderful advice.
Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen.
Take care, sir.
Thank you, sir.
See you guys.
Bye-bye. Yeah, what's nice about Google is that they do listen to feedback. They do give you the chance to do feedback on pretty much all their products.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is, of course, finding the feedback form can often be a little difficult if you don't know where to look. They do usually provide it, but it's not high on the list.
I was looking for a customer's house the other day in Bloomfield, you know, in a little village, and their house number was 5. And so one side of the street is even, the other side is odd. That's fairly common in the U.S., but apparently not that common in other countries.
No, it isn't.
And so I'm looking, you know, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Did I miss it? 18, 20, 5. What?
On the other side of the street across from 20.
It was supposed to be, right, it's supposed to be on the other side of the street. I was expecting that. So I'm waiting for it between, you know, 2 and 4 and 6.
Sure.
The 5 should be across the street from that. No.
Right, no, and it's way down. Yeah. That's actually pretty funny. We, for a while, Google Maps had me living in the, Google, if I turned on, GPS, it thought my house was two doors down.
Mm-hmm.
That eventually corrected itself without me doing anything because I know where I live. It didn't bother me then, you know, when I got to my street.
Yep.
I have no sense of direction, but I can find my house on my street. That I'm fairly good at.
Well, if I come from the other direction, I always miss it. But when I come from Monroe, I do. I catch it.
You catch it. Yeah, exactly right. But they eventually corrected it.
Yeah.
And I think that was just a...
The street view cars, too, will drive around and update and map things.
And I was wondering if it had something to do with... Because there was a GPS glitch at much the same time. A satellite glitch that got fixed. So.
I don't know if they've done some major upgrades because, what was it, just last October, we wound up going to new software for the company. And before, when we were driving around using the Maps program, we'd say, turn onto the street. And it'd say, you arrived.
You're right.
And the house could be another half a block or block down the road.
Right.
And you're looking slowly. Because now with the new software, it's like we turn onto the street and go down. And you go, it'll tell you to go down a little bit farther. And it's on your right-hand side.
And it's right there.
And it's right there.
It might not be the software. It might be the hardware. Because the newer hardware is more finely calibrated.
Could be.
It used to be that GPS was a national security thing. And so you could only get within 15 feet or 15 yards or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then over time, they've let them narrow that down. But the older hardware, the older GPS receivers still only did the grosser distance. So
that was always such a pain in the butt.
Well, right. But then you're using it wrong. But if the new hardware gave you better results, it's likely that the GPS chips in it are better than the old ones.
Looks like most of the results I'm getting are about 4 meters is typical.
Right.
So military is probably a lot less than that.
Yeah, right. It used to be, I want to say, 4 meters is about 15 feet anyway.
Yeah.
So, and maybe it was more, but
with a bigger
they've
antenna,
refined
you can
it
get
over
less.
Time.
Yeah. This is 28. When sometimes I'll come to a house that has a really, really long driveway and it says, you've arrived. And all I see are trees.
Right.
Because the house is a mile up that driveway.
Yeah.
Right. And that's always going to be there.
Yeah.
They're really,
yeah, no, they're
the
just
street getting, address is listed at the street.
Yeah. That's getting you to the property. And the property technically starts there at the curb.
Right.
And goes back.
Right.
There's some of the, especially the areas around Mendon and Victor and Bloomfield, there'll be like four houses way back in the woods with a shared driveway 3/4 of the way up, and then it splits off.
Right.
And now which split do I have to take? Because there's three numbers on the mailboxes at the road.
And that's all. Yeah, right.
Oh, you know, that's one thing that really irks me. And I would think fire department.
Yeah, I have a fire department friend, and he says the best thing you can do is put giant numbers on your house.
Yeah, exactly.
People can find it. Delivery people can find it. The fire department will find your house.
A lot faster. I mean, I go to so many places, even through the city.
Yep.
And they don't have any house numbers on them. And even in some of the newer complexes.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find it. You know, put it on the front porch, not over up on top of some eave or something else.
It's a dark number in a shadow.
Yeah, right.
And there's
right.
no lights on it. So if you happen to be there after dark, you can't find it.
All house numbers should be lit up.
Yep.
Should probably be neon lights.
I put big 4-inch reflecting letters on our mailbox because our house is set back a ways.
Right.
But the mailbox, you see.
They should come up with ones that just, you know, they attach and they're solar. So they just light up at night.
Solar LEDs, so you don't have to worry about the light bulbs. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's one thing I noticed now with the city. If you notice going around, a lot of the street lighting is going from the old bulbs to the new LEDs. And they're so much brighter and everything else. It's easier to see the roads and everything else. You know, it just would help.
Yep.
All the way around.
Much better idea all the way around. But we're probably never going to solve that problem ourselves.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just like us wanting. And I wish they had done it, you know, and maybe someday they'll listen to me. I keep touting it, but putting a little bit longer lasting battery and the stupid cell phones. I had mine go just about dead again. And, you know, I don't think I was doing real heavy use on it.
Right.
But, you know, if it was just a millimeter thicker.
Right.
Just to get.
Oh, no, it's all about thin. And we're blaming Steve Jobs for this. Phones have to be super thin. The thinner, the better.
Yeah,
well, okay,
and
if you want a 4-hour battery in your phone, that's get it thin.
It's a third-party opportunity to buy a battery pack.
Oh, shut up.
But people put cases on them anyways.
Yeah. Well, so you can get a battery case that will increase the length of your battery.
So why
but
even?
It's the fins. Yeah, so the 50s, car fins were huge.
Yeah, but
so we've got to wait until we're past the fin stage to get into the no fins.
Right. Yeah, but how much more weight does a millimeter or 2 millimeters more spread across the surface on a phone add to the, you know, the heavy weight or the thickness?
That's right.
Most folks
I'm
wouldn't be
I'm not a 9-year-old girl. I can carry a fairly hefty phone if I want to.
Most 9-year-olds can, too.
Yeah, that's true.
One of the other thing you don't hear a lot now is the understand that the battery capacity, especially in laptops, is limited to 100 watt hours, or you can't take it on an airplane.
Right.
So my battery is 95 watt hours.
Right.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, you'd think nowadays, because everything is going streaming on your phone or on your tablet, you'd want more battery life. Because more and more folks, I mean, you walk around and you see 90% of the population with their head down, walking around, staring at their phone.
Well, I have to say, surprises me, because there was an opportunity for a while. People all bought second batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if your battery died, you just pop the back off, change out the battery for a fully charged one on your way. And yet, for some reason, they don't want to sell those extra batteries. I guess it's that much cheaper to build it in and not have an openable case.
And it can be a little bit bigger without having that mechanism.
I suppose.
Yeah.
But not big enough.
Yeah. But yeah, so there are companies that sell external battery packs that you plug in and your computer thinks it's plugged into the wall.
Right.
Well, yeah, I've got what they call a supercharger for my phone.
Yep.
I can plug it into the cigarette lighter and that used to call a cigarette lighter.
Right.
Just a charging.
The auxiliary power port. Yeah.
And just put it in there and it'll charge it within 15 minutes.
Right.
And it does, you know, it gets it up to like 85% if it's down to, you know, 5% or so. But, you know, still no, it wouldn't take it. The technology is there. It's just a matter of somebody making it as a good selling point. Oh, now our phone will last this amount of time.
Well, there's already a lot of commercials that say all day battery life, asterisks.
Depending on your use.
Depending on your use, you know. So wireless web, yeah, sure, you'll get 10, 12 hours out of it. You know, streaming video, maybe 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I only work 4 hours a day, so it lasts all day for me.
Right. Well, the new Pixel 4a has, you know, all these things, OLED and always on and yada, yada, yada. And I wonder how long that battery's going to last.
Yep.
All right. That music tells us you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but despair not. Oh, loved listener. We will be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And listen, don't wait until the last 10 minutes to call in. Call in now, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Text us at 585-205-8887, and we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edmund.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887. But if you do text us, please provide enough information for us to answer your question.
We did get one text in. The person that wrote it didn't sign it. Says Frontier lets you keep your address after you leave.
Yeah, a lot of ISPs are starting to do that now, we've seen.
Right. And the nice thing about that is it's actually at Yahoo.
Yeah.
So,
and that's probably why they're doing it.
Yeah, right.
Because so they don't need the servers for it all.
And as we were saying earlier to Gary, what you can do is get a Gmail address or whatever, and then go into Yahoo and just forward your email from your Frontier address to Gmail. You can certainly leave it at Yahoo, but
that's got more holes than Swiss cheese.
I'm not as big a fan of Yahoo as I am of Gmail. So that's your choice, but there you are.
Gmail makes it just so much easier. I mean, if your computer dies, you know, or your
phone
dies. Right,
because you're using IMAP, which means the mail stays up at the server.
Yeah, it's there.
But that's one of the things with Frontier now, is if you set your computer up for Frontier, it has to be POP. Frontier doesn't offer IMAP at all. Yep. But you can tell it Yahoo IMAP, put in your Frontier credentials.
And it works.
And it works as IMAP.
Yep. All right, Google Play Music.
Woohoo.
Is the next service to be given the death sentence by Google, and the company has announced a bit more detail on how its execution will be carried out. The main message from the blog post is back up your music now, as Google says it would wipe out all Google Music collections in December of 2020. Now, don't get too excited because you'll be able to move it. I'll tell you about that in a minute. We've known for a while that the shutdown would be sometime in 2020, but for most regions, Google has now narrowed the timeline. As of late August, users will no longer be able to upload or download music through the Music Manager. Pre-orders and purchases will be shut down. In September, streaming shuts down for users in New Zealand and South Africa. In October, global streaming shuts down. The Google Music app and website will cease to be. And in December, your music collections will get deleted. At the time of the streaming shutdown, the app will have been showing shutdown messages for about 5 months. So if a user somehow missed all of those, 2 months with no streaming at all will hopefully be enough to get them to research what happened to Google Music. Saving your music collection from deletion is not difficult. Just go to music.youtube.com/transfer, and assuming you're logged in to Google, and click a few buttons, and it starts your YouTube music transfer process.
Is this YouTube Music or Google Music?
No, music.youtube.com/transfer.
All right.
The process.
Google Play Music is still there, and it's inviting me to subscribe.
Yes, but it's going to go away. The process is actually painless, and your Google Music account will continue to work even after the transfer. If you decide you don't want to use YouTube Music, you still have access to tons of download options later without the looming threat of the Google Music deletion. A copy of your files isn't hard to get either. The Google Music Manager is a Windows and Mac application that can download music or upload music or download your entire music collection with a few clicks. But like Google said, it will stop working soon. The other option is Google Takeout, which will wrap your entire music collection in a zip file and send you a download link. The processing for this can take hours. Whichever option you choose, make sure you do something before December, because after that, there will be no way to recover your music. Google Play Music has been around since 2011 and lets users upload thousands of songs to the internet for free for streaming playback on most other devices. It's been the primary way to play music on the Google Home smart speakers, and it offers music purchases, monthly streaming radio, and podcasts. Google Music has been neglected for years, though, and like the company often does, Google decided to make a second competing music stream service instead of maintaining the first service. I don't know why. That second service is YouTube Music, which is now Google's favored music app. The merger between the two was originally announced in 2018, and now it's finally happening. YouTube Music places an emphasis on music videos, as you can guess from the name, and the app has a much more modern design. YouTube Music awkwardly blends together your entire 15-year YouTube activity history with your music collection, tossing any liked videos and subscriptions that have been algorithmically flagged as music into your collection, and mixing together your YouTube playlists and Google Music playlists. There's no way to stop this. In 2018, Google told Google Music users nothing will change regarding YouTube Music's upload music functionality, but now that the feature is actually here, that's not true. Duh. So, do you use Google Play Music? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, my Google Music list is completely different than my YouTube Music list.
Not anymore. Or it won't be soon. But yeah, I've been using Google Play Music and loving it forever. It's just another one of those examples where Google just screws you up every chance they get.
Well, they're getting like Microsoft.
Add that to the Google graveyard.
Yeah.
You know, well, they're no different than, like I say, Microsoft. You know, you get into some package that Microsoft bought up or started using, and you start getting used to it, and then they end it. Say,
well, yeah. People are really angry at Apple right now for Dark Sky.
Same thing.
There's been a great application called Dark Sky, which is an astronomy app for your phone. You point it at an area of the sky, and it tells you what the constellations are and all that. Beautiful thing. Apple bought it, and now they've simply decided to turn off the Android access, which is just petty.
Hyper-local weather.
It's just petty, okay? I'm sorry. It's petty and cheap.
Because they can't.
And I would have thought it would be beneath Apple. Apparently not.
And they still keep Android music available after they bought Beats. So the Beats music for Android is still running. So they can run an Android program.
Yeah, sure they can. It's just cheap.
It's
I would have thought it was beneath them, and it's not.
What? They just don't choose to.
Right.
Because, like you said, it's not making them a ton of money.
Right. It's just low class. I'm sorry. It's just really low class.
You know, everything's about the stockholders, you know.
Well, we've been saying that for years because they are a publicly traded company.
Yep.
Their customers are their stockholders. We are the product
they
bring to the stockholders, and
what
Android users don't bring anything to the stockholders.
And all of us,
it's how still low class.
How much have you made for me today?
Right. Exactly right.
Forget yesterday.
Exactly right. So Google has announced the Pixel 4a, which is their $349, $350 for a phone. It's quite an amazing phone. It's
what other features did they add versus the 3a?
But 3a, well, it's got the OLED capacitive screen, 16 million colors, 1080 by 2340 pixels, Corning Google Glass 3. It's got the always-on display, so those are all the same things. It's Android 10. It's got a better chip, the Qualcomm Snapdragon 730G. It's an octa-core processor. It's got the Adreno 618 GPU. There's no card slot, as is normal for these nowadays. It does have 128 gig of RAM. 128 gig of storage and 6 gig of RAM, so that's nice. It's a 12.2 megapixel camera on the front. I forget what the camera, on the back rather. Oh, the selfie camera is 8 megapixels. It's got stereo speakers. It's got a headphone jack. God bless the people of Google. It's got a headphone jack. And it's got all kinds of, you know, Bluetooth 5.1 and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's only got a 3140 milliamp hour battery, which still is all day. I mean, it's fine, but you're right. It could be faster.
Yeah.
It's got the 18 watt fast charger. It comes only in black, and it's $349.
Like I said, somebody's going to wake up one of these days because of the way we're going, everything being, you know, tied to streaming.
Well, what they're trying to do is find a better battery technology that holds more power at a lower weight. I don't care about another ounce of weight. Like I said, I'm not a 9-year-old girl. I can carry around a slightly bigger phone. But yeah, the big thing is that the Pixel 4a has that amazing camera technology in the background. It takes just utterly amazing pictures, even at $350. There's already a bunch of YouTube videos comparing it to the iPhone and the Oppo and a bunch of other camera, the Samsung and a bunch of others, and it's coming out ahead in all of them. And it's really the software that does it more than the hardware.
Well, that's the one thing that got the guy ticked off when I wound up going for my 3A.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to sell me the 3.
Yeah.
You know, well, this is a better one. And I wouldn't let him. I said, what? This takes better pictures than the camera I got at home. He couldn't get me out of there fast enough.
Right, because you were only spending $350 instead of $800. You know, the reality is I can buy two or three cameras, three phones, for the price of one of the high-end phones from Apple or Samsung. Why would I spend that money for what amounts to not much more? And in some cases, less, depending on what it is you do. So it's hard to figure out.
Yeah, there was just nothing, though, in it on the three that was that exciting to me, you know. He was more or less treating me like, you know, some teenage kid that wants to go around snapping all these pictures. And it's like, no, it's not me.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. A couple weeks ago, I get PC World, and there was a notification that Windows 10 will remove Windows 32 support.
Yeah.
Focus shifts the cloud.
Yeah.
Does that mean I will not be able to run any 32-bit programs when they switch?
Right. Yep.
Is there a way to tell if your programs are 32-bit or not?
Well, they'll stop running.
How about before that?
Oh, before that. You should be able to how would you tell?
Well, there's one program that I have been running since Windows XP that I love. I found nothing to replace it.
Well, you're going to kind of have to. What you should see is if you open the task manager on the processes tab, you'll see all the processes that are running. If a program is 32-bit, somewhere near its name, you should see the text star or asterisk 32.
Yeah.
But yeah, the simple reality is that Microsoft is abandoning 32-bit. Software, too bad.
Yeah.
Remember back in the day, I don't know if it's still there, you could put a program on, say it was for Windows 95, and you could load a program, right-click on it, and say, you know, run it in
compatibility mode.
Yeah, compatibility mode. And
that's gone. That'll be gone. They don't want any 32-bit software anymore. And I get it.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that slows Windows down is the state change. See, the way processors, mm-hmm. well, Intel processors yeah. work, is you are running either in 32-bit mode
or
in 64-bit mode. So if you're running in one and you want to switch to the other, it has to take the entire state of the processor, save it out to a special area of RAM, load the other one in, run that, and then load that back out and load the other one in. And if it's doing that 10,000 times a second,
yeah.
it slows your system down. And that's one of the reasons that Macs are so much faster, because they're only 64-bit. And it's one of
We only did that last year.
Right. But that's, yeah. Right. And it's the reason Linux has always been so much faster is because you load either 64 or 32. And if you do load a 32-bit program, it's only active while you're running that one program. So, for example, if I want to run voice in Second Life,
mm-hmm.
that's only a 32-bit program. But once I stop running that, it goes away.
Okay.
It's not sitting there in the background.
It's only a temporary
waiting,
thing. Again.
Right. So Microsoft's easy method of solving that dilemma is to just get rid of 32-bit programs entirely. And if there's some program you love, I'm sorry, you're either going to have to find an alternative or just not use it anymore.
Or keep an old computer running an old OS.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the same thing happened on the Mac side last year when we went to OS Catalina. Both Microsoft and Apple have been telling people for at least 10 years this is coming, but now it's suddenly a shock.
Right.
And on the Mac, there's a program called, in the Mac OS, you can use the system profiler, much like the task manager in Windows, to see if it's 32-bit or 64-bit. But on the Mac, there's a program called Go64 that will scan all of your programs and tell you which one is 64 or 32. And there's a little column you can put in for the cost of upgrade. So then you can calculate how much it's going to cost to upgrade your OS. So that free OS upgrade could end up costing you several thousand dollars in other software.
That's right.
Okay. I know that a Windows XP will obviously run. That's what it's written for. What is there a Windows version that won't be upgraded?
Nope.
Like Windows 7 with, you know, something like that. How far back can I go and still be able to run my 32-bit program?
If you set up a Windows a VM, you could probably load, if you've got a copy of XP or 7, you could load it in there. And just run that when you need that one program.
And so it's Windows 10, May 2020 update is, removes 32-bit. So anything before that will do 64,
right.
Will do 32-bit.
Right, or you can load up a version of Windows 10 and never upgrade it.
Okay. I mean, I've run virtual desktops before, but they're small. It's hard to see. If you're doing photos, it's hard to see.
Well, and it depends on what you're going to do. Well, you can always increase the screen size, but it also depends on what you're going to do. And many of them, you'd have to create a special share folder and put everything in the share folder and use it from there and blah, 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 blah. So it becomes a little bit of a pain in the neck, but it's doable. It entirely changes the way you work.
And I don't want to change.
I get it.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a good day.
Yep. You too. Sorry.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's just no way around it.
It's just the way it is.
Microsoft, like we said last week, Microsoft is finally starting to go to their subscription model. And they want to pare down what they have to deal with. So getting rid of 32-bit software is one way to do that. It also gets people upgrading, because if you've got... if you're still running Windows 2000 or Office 2010 or Office 2006, you're running 32-bit software. That's going to go away. Mm-hmm. You will not be able to run it anymore. The heck with you.
Well, that's where he's maybe better off right now, grabbing another box and not have it on the internet and just have it there for his, you know, intranet.
Right.
And just be able to run that software and any other programs that... You don't have to worry about the Windows updates and everything else.
Right. And it's still an issue, because if he gets a worm on one machine, it'll go through his entire network and hit that machine too. But it's less of an issue, but it's still an issue. So yep. you have to make that decision on your own.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that Microsoft is going to abandon 32-bit software. If you're still running something that's 32-bit, you're done. That's just simply not going to run on the new version of Windows. The October, what did you say, the October update?
The May update.
The May update.
That OEMs are now putting on the machines.
Oh, they're putting it on the machines now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you buy a new machine now, it probably won't run 32-bit software.
Right.
And if you've upgraded to the May update, you may have lost some software you don't realize yet. Which, you know, as I mentioned, companies have had 10 years to make this switch. And unless you're running a really old program, you may never notice
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there's...
Which it sounds like
turnkey,
Steve is doing.
Yeah,
turnkey stuff that, you know... But for the most part, I don't think I can remember any stuff that I'm running that's 32-bit. I couldn't wait to get everything switched over to 64-bit, because, like you said, it's very obvious. Why would I want to slow down my machine
right.
running 32-bit software when you have the option to run 64?
Right.
And there's some of the packages that I do use that do give you the option. Do you want the 32-bit or the 64? I wonder if that's going to go away.
Right. If it's a Windows machine, they may not take the option out because that it's programming. They mm-hmm. just might leave it in. But if you select it, you won't be able to run it.
Yeah.
They in one article I found from Bleeping Computer, they went to a Steam survey and found that only 0.2% of Steam users have 32-bit Windows 10.
Steam users are high-end gamers.
Yeah.
Cheese and crackers. So well, but they knew that that's where they would get the answer they wanted.
Yeah.
That's why. You know, there's
played
lies,
to that
damned
audience.
Lies, and statistics.
Yeah, they played to that audience.
86% using Windows. So the remaining 13% are Mac and Linux. Does Linux have a Steam client?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. You can now download for free Linux distributions, or distros as the cool kids call them, that are... Steam capable right out of the box. You don't even have to load anything else. They're designed to play Steam games. So, yeah, there's some pretty neat stuff going on there. And that's...
For our audience, explain Steam Games.
Oh, Steam is a streaming gaming service that's out there on the internet, and you can become a member of Steam. It's just the name of the company, and play online games, streaming games.
Well, and most of the games have a multiplayer component,
right?
But it can also be thought of as a game store, where instead of buying a Xbox 360 disc. You go to Steam, you buy the Steam game and run it on your PC.
Right, there are free games and there are paid games.
And some of them run locally, but most of them have a multiplayer network support built into them.
Right, and they run on all three major operating systems. So if you decide to transfer from a PC to a Mac or to a Linux box, you don't lose those games. Mm-hmm. They'll still run. And you do need a decent connection, but it does give you the option to play against people all over the planet.
And that's where, going back to our very first caller, the machine, we're recommending him. You got to have the horsepower to do it and not get the hiccups.
Right. Depends on the game. There are some very low-end Steam games for kids and for people who just want to play, a small game. But if you're a hardcore gamer, there are some pretty decent Steam games there as well. And Google's doing the same thing with their Stadia product. It's the same idea. So you can play those games there instead. Easy enough.
And was it Microsoft? Well, Microsoft, Xbox 360, or Xbox Live.
Right.
Sony's got one. Apple Arcade. Everyone's going into gaming now.
Yeah, gaming is where the money is.
Somebody just texted in and says Thunderbird is only 32-bit. Do you think they'll do a 64-bit, or will it go away?
I don't know that it's only 32-bit. I'll have to look that up. I'm running
the
Thunderbird.
That was in 2018. The official Thunderbird is 32-bit, but there is a 64-bit fork.
Yeah, and I'm running it on Linux, so I'm pretty sure it's 64-bit. Oh, that's a good question. I didn't pay attention when I loaded that. Huh. All right. I will look that up during the break. But we are going to take a quick break right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Before we go back to the phones, we had another text from Steve from Greece, who wanted to know if he could dual boot between 32-bit and 64-bit Windows. I personally do not recommend it. Dual booting two different Windows versions on the same machine, often the upgrade process gets confused and tries to upgrade the wrong one and can seriously screw up your machine. Dual booting two disparate operating systems like Linux and Windows is generally not a problem, although the Windows upgrader still is not 100%, but it's still better. You're better off having two different hard drives and picking which hard drive you boot from at boot up time. But I don't know about you two guys, but I do not recommend dual booting two different Windows versions. And now back to the phones. Our next caller is Scotty from Fairport, New York. Hi, Scotty. What's up?
Hi, Nick. I've got a situation with my website. The guy who is hosting it says that I've got to make some decisions with it before a cutoff date, and a host, it gave me a price that was like, holy smokes, it was really outrageous. So I'm trying to find where I can get my website up without going over my budget. So I don't think you can really point me to any specific person, but can you give me some tips on how to find someone to help me keep my website online?
Yeah. What kind of website is it? Is it a WordPress site, or is it just somebody wrote code for you, or how does that work?
Well, yeah, it's, I guess somebody wrote code. What was nice about the website is that I could enter in to the website, and I could tweak it. You know, I could adjust the page and adjust the text if I want to write like I'm running some kind of special deal. You know, I could change that. So that was kind of neat about that website that I had access to.
All right, I'll tell you what. If Dave can, off the air, take your email address, I'll put the word out to a couple of people. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Right now, yeah. I'm having a hard time understanding to rewrite my website, which is fairly simple. It's going to cost me $3,000.
Text me at 585-205-8887 with your email address, and I'll pass it on to Nick.
Okay, 505-205-8887.
You got it.
Yep.
You know who am I addressing to?
Just, it's a text message, and we'll
it's
see.
It's a text
it.
Message from your phone. So it's 585-205-8887, and just put your email address that you want Nick to write to you, and I'll get that to him.
I really appreciate your help, guys.
No problem.
And that sort of brings out the difference in the different types of websites. If you want someone to code a website for you, that's not
cheap.
So a $3,000 estimate is probably low.
Yeah.
If you want to run your own website, you can use WordPress for free.
Right.
But there's a little more involved, and so it's right. How much do you want to do versus how much do you want someone else to do?
Right. And you can also host. Right. You can host your own WordPress as well.
Yeah.
Soundbites is actually a WordPress site.
WordPress is one of the more common web hosting systems. I think they're like 70% of all websites are hosted by WordPress.
Right.
We had another text come in, and it says, any idea why Windows 10 version 2, 2004 takes 2 to 3 days to update?
How fast is your internet connection?
Yeah,
Windows 10 2004?
It's version
2004. It's the 2004 upgrade.
Yeah,
they didn't name it 2003 because there already was a Windows 2003, right. So it's 2004.
Right.
Now it's 2004.
Right. Right.
Sometimes called the May 2020 update.
Well, it depends on the speed of your internet access. If you're on, say, Frontier, it's going to take 2 or 3 days to download
all of
that.
And the speed of the machine, he doesn't say.
And how fast your machine is, right.
Yeah. You know, if that's a 9-year-old machine that used to run Windows 98.
Right. And how much RAM you have and how much disk space.
How much free disk space.
Free disk space you have, right. It's certainly not impossible that it would take a long time to update, but that's more on who your internet. If you've got, say, Frontier and a very slow connection, it's going to take much longer than if you've got green light and a gigabit.
This is prime example why we need, when you text in information,
we need more.
We
info.
Need a lot more information because we could, throw so many ideas mm-hmm. up there that it's impossible to cover all the variables.
And it's even possible that there's something wrong with your computer. The hard drive could be dying or something. So it's
we don't know too many things.
So I guess the short answer is it shouldn't take that long. Something's wrong.
Right.
Where?
People what
ask
that
us,
something is and where.
Right, people ask us all the time when they come into the store. So what's going on with my computer? Something's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what is it? We don't know yet. We have to take it in the back and run some tests.
Right, right, right.
Will you tell me what's wrong? Yes, we will tell you what's
wrong.
No,
we're going to keep it a big, dark secret.
Yeah.
That's what you're paying your diagnostic fee for, is for us to find out what's wrong and tell you.
Yep.
Well, that, I'm sure Steve gets the same thing. I used to get it. You know, people bring it in, they just, so what do you think it is?
It's broken.
It's an issue.
Right.
And, well, what do you think it's going to, how long is it going to take? Until it's fixed?
Don't know.
Yeah.
Longer than 20 seconds, you're standing in front of me.
Right.
And it's gonna, the time is going to keep growing as long as you keep me at the counter and not in the back looking at it.
Not in the back looking at it. Exactly right. Exactly right.
Or when they get, you know, dropped it off.
Yeah.
And then an hour later. So did you have a chance to look at it yet?
Yeah.
No, you're down the line. You know, you're not the only customer in here, and it'll get to the bench. How soon? When the others are done.
We'll let you know. We'll send you an email that it's on the bench and diagnostics are running and here's what's wrong and we'll call you. One of my favorite annoying customer stories was someone who dropped their computer off at 5 o'clock one night and then called at 10 a.m. the next morning just as we opened. Is my computer done yet? Well, you just dropped it off at 5 last night. Well, yeah, but you're open till 6.
Yeah. Right. And I was telling you before the show, when I worked at the computer center, we had Ed in the back room. Ed was amazing. People would come in screaming and yelling and angry and porked off and just really in a mood. And I would send them in the back to Ed, and they would come out happy and mellow. Yeah, is everything all right? Yeah, Ed said it'll take a couple of weeks, but really that's okay. That'll be fine. And they'd walk out happy. And I always think, the hell are they smoking back there? Whatever it is, why aren't they sharing it? Right,
yeah,
why aren't they sharing stuff here? Edibles, bring the edibles up.
Have the brownie.
But Ed was amazing at pouring oil on the waters, calming the waters.
Art said something in builtwith.com is useful for novice users to figure out what the web server application server is. Art.
Oh, you can see what software a server is running.
Right. Oh, that's
which
nice.
Which might give you an inkling as to what software you might want to run, if you like that, the way that website looks.
Mm-hmm.
But so we as a computer repair shop, we have a lot of companies. Since we worked with the Mac, we had a lot of ad agencies and artistic types of companies. And then we had coders and whatnot type. We have a lot of different clients. For years, we tried to get the coding people who did websites that had great code and looked horrible together with the ad agencies who did websites that looked really great but had horrible code, get together and make a really good-looking website with really great code. No, we want to use Front Page. It's crappy code.
Right, right, right.
And no one ever did. or you hire the college student at $10 a page to do your website.
Well, there's a difference between a true website and brochureware, as we used to call it. If all you want is essentially your brochure, where it's just, hi, we do this, here's a picture of us, here's our phone number. Right. Then that's a pretty cheap website.
Yeah, that's just a presence on the internet. Right. Somebody can go to your website, find out the particular information. It's like an info page.
And you've probably seen TV commercials for some of the more popular, you know, cookie cutter website.
Right.
Website hosting programs.
Right.
$5 or $10
Wix
bucks a month.
Right. And that's, I'll tell you the story of my wife at the beanqueen.com for her, for the coffee stand at the Public Market. She started out with brochureware because she really didn't want a website. But I took it out for her anyway. It's like I took out one for my daughter.
Do you have a list of coffee on your website?
Now we do. But that's the thing.
How long did that take?
It took years because she didn't want to do it. She just wanted the brochureware. Yeah. Then COVID hit. And she realized she was losing sales because people couldn't order over the net. So now all of a sudden it became absolutely imperative.
That you get it up.
That I get it up.
Uh-huh.
So it's now up. You can now order coffee directly from the website. You can then pick it up at the market, or she'll meet you anywhere in a certain vicinity of Rochester.
Yeah.
Or she'll ship it out for whatever. And you can order it online and pay through PayPal or Stripe, I believe is what she uses, or whatever, and then pick it up. But, you know, for the longest time, she didn't even want a website. And then she was perfectly happy with brochureware. And then all of a sudden it became morally imperative that it be up an hour ago.
You and it was your have fault. To get it up right away.
I can say all this because she's at market and not
You're
listening.
Retired now. You have nothing else to do.
I have nothing else to do. And for a couple of weeks, that was the only nothing else I had to do. But it's up now, and it all works. It even works on the phone. Thank you. I'm a genius. Yep. So you can do you can order directly from her website. But now it's a full-blown real website. You can do feedback, and it tells you things. And
you sure this is coffee and not dessert pastries? Bananas Foster, Bavarian chocolate.
Yeah, I know it.
Good caramel stuff, chocolate. Huh? Yeah, dark chocolate orange.
That's the flavors. If you go down farther, yeah. You'll see the varietals.
Dragon's Kiss.
Dragon's Kiss, very tasty. Cafe Strega, which is a witch's brew. We have all kinds. Some are exclusive. You can see by the cup. Some are seasonal. You can see by the snowflake. And they're all up there, and you can order by the half pound or the pound. And then you pay on the site, and emails go out, and all. It's magic. Flipping magic.
And how long did that have to...
Well, it only took a week.
Yeah, but no.
That whole website I programmed in a week.
Yeah, but how many years?
Yeah, it's about 20.
We were asking.
25 years.
And you'd sit there and say, don't even go there. Yep. Don't even go there.
Yep. 20, what? How old is my desk? So 28 years. Because I've told this story
it
many
took
times.
A pandemic.
We had been very much trying to have a child for a long time. And then Elaine had been going to market and buying our coffee. And the lady who ran the stand said, I've got 8 children and I'm done. I'm pregnant again and I have to sell the stand. And Elaine joked about
You'd
the fact
that... You think she would stay to stand more.
Yeah, right. And Elaine joked about the fact that maybe that's why she got pregnant and will get pregnant now. About a month after we bought the stand, we were pregnant. So it all worked out for us. But that means I know pretty clearly as the how long we've been running that stand. And I got the domain name, the Bean Queen, yep. BeanQueen.com. Not the, but BeanQueen.com. And is it Bean
it's
Queen?
It's
the Bean Queen. Yeah, it's yep, thebeanqueen.com. And I got that pretty much the day we bought the stand. And so she's been using it for nothing. And then all of a sudden, got to have it today.
Yeah.
And I'm relatively proud of the work I've done here. It works. It works on the phone.
So what kind of percolator do you recommend?
I will come over there and hurt you. COVID or no COVID, I will come over there and harm you. And in fact, if you go to Brewing the Perfect Cup.
That's what made me think of it.
There you are. So there's all kinds of good stuff on the site, and it works out really pretty nicely, and she seems to be happy with it right now. She keeps tweaking it now.
Oh?
See, the real problem is I made it happen too fast.
So now she expects that.
Yes. Now she asks for like ridiculous things, and I'll say, okay, that'll take a few days to do. What? No, really, it'll take a few days to do. Oh. Or she'll, Friday afternoon, I want to add this feature for tomorrow. No. No.
Invent a time machine.
Yeah, right.
You created that monster.
I did create that monster.
So you cannot blame anybody.
Nope, it's all me. It's on me.
It's all on you. You know, you had plenty of years.
It's all on me. I absolutely
get it ready,
did it.
And you should have milked it for at least a month.
I should have. Oh, Laddie, you didn't tell him how long it would really take, did you?
Oh, honey. You know how much work this is going to involve? I've got these other projects, and you want me to put everything on hold? This is going to take quite a bit of coding time.
Yeah, yeah. Meanwhile,
you
can
bat it out that evening and just say, well, I'm working on it.
I read a story about a summer intern that did that. He got brought in on a coding project, and you know this program takes 3 days to do our weekly report, and you know, can you make it faster? And he found horrible mistakes and got it to run in 10 minutes. And said, well, okay, I can make it take about 12 hours. Is that good? Okay, great. Yeah, that's and so from 3 days to 12 hours. Yeah. And then a couple of months later, can you make it any faster than that? So he changes the weight loop.
Right.
How about 6 hours? Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah. And the other thing you do is you give them a task.
Yeah.
So when Elaine said, you know, I want the website, I say, okay, I have to have a list of the coffees. Well, that's going to take me a while. Well, no, it isn't, because you've got a spreadsheet. Just give me this spreadsheet. But if you want to take the whole spreadsheet and type it up in a Word document and send me the Word document, you go ahead. That's on you.
Did you tell her about copy and paste?
But I did. I got her to send me the spreadsheet. So it was actually pretty easy. And ordering is, I think, pretty easy right now. And you can see that there's the varietals and estate selections and the flavors and all that stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
And the exclusives and the seasonals.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of folks now, because they don't want to go out, are, you know, doing more and more online. And, you know, that's just the way to do it. And they're, you know, it's very popular now with the new way of doing things is to be able to order online and say, drive by and pick up. I know Walmart and Wegmans and all these buying their groceries. A lot of folks have gotten in the habit. They do their ordering right there. All they do is set up a time and they pull up. They open the back of their car and bam, load it up and off they go.
Yep.
And, you know,
and we're essentially doing the same thing. Well, you know, she'll meet you in a place or she'll go to your house or you can come to our house. Or you can pick it up at the market itself and make it real easy.
Curbside service.
Yep. Yep. And that's beginning to help. She thought, well, this is nobody's going to buy this. Nobody's going to go for this because it's all about personal service at the market. And that's what, you know, that's what it is.
Yep.
But particularly now,
the new normal.
And so it's slowly growing and people are picking up and she's got all kinds of stuff in here and it's all fresh. She buys coffee every week. So because we buy enough that it's going to.
Well, that was one thing that my late wife used to love was your decaf coffee. Because yeah. It's water processed.
Right, right, right.
It was a lot healthier for her, and she could drink that. She couldn't drink, because they told her, you got to go to decaf. And she hated the taste of the decaf.
Oh, everybody does, because it's Swiss processed.
But the minute she tried yours, she goes, wait a minute, this is good.
Yeah. Sorry. What we do is Swiss process. It's a water-based decaffeination. And then
the big difference.
The other one, I think, is French process. I don't even remember anymore. But it basically uses a chemical like formaldehyde to leach out the caffeine. And that leaves behind that bitter taste.
Yeah.
Which I never liked. I never liked it either. And that's why we use the Swiss water process.
Yeah, no, that was just so much better. And like I say, she loved it.
Yeah. So but building your own website. And did we get a text from Art yet? With his email address? Well, Art, I can't help you until you send me your email address. So, but at any rate, the idea is that running a website is anything from put up a couple of pages that's brochureware to a full blown. You can order, you can change your order, you can do whatever you want to do on the website, and that takes a lot more work and a lot more cost. Obviously, to pay for that work. So,
and if you want a shopping cart to actually sell products, that adds a layer.
Right.
Yep.
Right. There's all that stuff that can be added, and in between are the WordPress type sites where it takes somebody to set it up for you, but then you can go in and edit things if you want. And let's not forget Art. It's the text number is 205-8887. 585 area code, 585-205-8887. And we're done for another week. That music tells me we're finished. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Want to thank everybody who called in and texted in. We appreciate all of that. And we'll see you next week with a whole nother 2 hours of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that because of your generosity, we can remain member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to each other, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.